if you can't read a food label, then you can't educate yourself. And so that led me to wanting to do a study comparing the amount of nutrition knowledge that legally blind and sighted people may have, and then as an added piece, their dietary habits.
Hey everyone, Nathan Long here, president of Saybrook University here in beautiful, beautiful, just beautiful Pasadena, California. You gotta love California. Every day is a beautiful day out here. Anyway, welcome to another episode of Saybrook Insights Podcast. Today's guest, I'm super excited about. Her name is Ms. Tracy Meadow. She's a PhD student in Saybrook's Integrative and Functional Nutrition Program. Tracy really couches herself as a lifelong learner who came to Saybrook with a big, multifaceted goal, as she says in her bio. Now in the dissertation phase of her program, Tracy's found that her pursuit of a PhD did not just stop at earning the degree. It's really become a life of advocacy and driving for positive social change, especially in the space of nutrition. As a legally blind and deaf adult, Tracy has had to overcome much adversity. Throughout her journey of overcoming this adversity, Tracy recognized that many others have similar stories. We're going to learn more from Tracy in this interview. It was really, really great to hear from her about the work she's doing in this space around inclusivity. We speak particularly around visual impairment and its impact and the impact of nutrition in that community and ways that we can do a better job societally in advancing better health that supports everyone in their long-term goals. I think this is one that you don't want to miss. And hey, she's really, really into the plant-based lifestyle, which I fully endorse. I think it's terrific. You'll hear more about that in just a moment. All right, let's get to it with Ms. Tracy Meadows. Ms. Tracy Meadows, it is so cool to have you on today with Saybrook Insights. I have been looking forward to this interview. We've had a number of students on before. And I was really intrigued by your background, your passion around inclusivity and accommodations and the work that you're doing in this space. So welcome to the podcast. Good to have you here today.
Thank you, Dr. Long. I'm so honored. I'm so honored to be a voice for Saybrook and other students. So thank you for having me.
I think you're going to be a fabulous voice both for our students and community, as well as the wider community, especially based on what I've been reading about you. So we'll learn more. So tell us about Tracy Meadows before Saybrook University. What were some of those formative experiences you had prior to Saybrook that you'd be willing to share?
Well, I kind of have a long story, so I'll keep it short. Before Saybrook, actually before I received my first undergraduate degree, I was kind of just existing in life. I went through some troublesome times and then remarried and found a purpose in my life and decided to just complete a collegiate degree at that point. I had been through nursing school. That didn't pan out. I had a diagnosis that taking my vision and my hearing. So I did that. I completed my bachelor's degree in May of 2019. And then I thought, well, I'll just go on for a master's. So I completed my master's degree of science in nutrition at Lamar University here in Texas in August of 2020, so a year later. And then I found Saybrook. And then I kind of found more of that purpose. And so that's why I'm here at Saybrook.
I really appreciate you pointing out one of those pivotal moments. I'd like if you're willing to share a little bit more. You said that you know, you received this diagnosis relative to your vision and your hearing. And I'm curious, what sort of led to that? What were some of the things that bubbled up for you during that time when that diagnosis was made?
Yes. So I was a new mom. I had a 2-year-old at the time, and it was a routine visit. And they told me at the time that yes, I have progressive vision loss, which would take my peripheral vision. So I have central vision that's not that great, but my vision loss is attributed to retinitis pigmentosa, macular degeneration and retinal detachment. So at the time, I was 23 years old, and I still had 25 degrees visual field, where everyone else has about 180.
Oh, wow.
I didn't really receive that diagnosis that well. So I kind of just said, well, you know, it's fine, you know, because at the time they told me I would be, you know, in my 80s or so before I lost all my sight.
Sure.
And so I just continued with life. I raised my child, raised my son, and that was the greatest joy I've ever experienced. And my vision just kind of rapidly deteriorated from that point on. I'm going to be 45 this year, and I have less than 5 degrees left. So I'm losing about a degree a year.
Oh, wow.
And there's no cure, unfortunately. And I try to use it as a positive thing, even though some days are better than others. But I got to a point in my life, and it was at that same pivotal moment that I decided to pursue just finishing a collegiate degree, that, you know what, my passion in my lifeblood is helping others in any way I can. And I thought, you know what, if I can do this, anybody can do this. And so that was kind of the foundational motivation for me to pursue a higher education degree, and to continue moving forward with my life instead of sitting in a corner.
That takes a lot of gumption and personal motivation to move through that. And kudos to you for doing that. I mean, I think also seeing the expansive opportunity to support not only yourself, but also others in your community who are going through similar challenges can be, I think, motivating. It's like you said, you're going to have good and bad days. What levels of support did you have as you received this diagnosis and things went through? What types of support did you have? Community supports that you went to, in addition to your family, of course. And how did you find that at the time?
Of course, my main support system was my family, for first and foremost. And they've been there through the ups and downs, you know, the ins and outs and all of the above. I just have to give a thank you shout out to my family for that. But I really didn't receive any support or services until I looked into going back to school. And at that time, I was living in another city. And I got connected with Independent Living Services, and they taught me how to use a blind cane. And the part of Independent Living Services is the key word, independence. In our ableist society, they try to encourage people with impairments or disabilities like myself to live independently. And that's a big component of someone's confidence within themselves, if they can do things independently, you know. So that was kind of the first step in services or support that I received. And from there, they provided services as in the form of tuition assistance to complete degrees. And at the time, not knowing that I would be able to and afforded to be able to complete multiple degrees, I just wanted to have one. I wasn't greedy, right? I just wanted to finish, you know, my college. And so from there, it kind of just took off.
That is great. And so many people I know of who've made use of those services and access those services have really, really found them to be helpful. But I think sometimes it takes a network and the ability to connect and stay connected. And it sounds like you did just that. And I know that serves as an inspiration for a lot of your current work. So we'll get into that in just a moment. I think it's very, very powerful, the work you're doing now. Before we get to that, though, how did you find your way to Saybrook? What was it that appealed to you about the university or the IFN, or for our audience, the IFN program is the Integrative Functional Nutrition Program?
Yes. So it's an interesting story. When I was going through some very difficult health and mental issues, I had no kind of formal nutrition background or education in nutrition. I had a medical background. I was in nursing school years and years ago. And I stumbled across plant-based diets. And I decided to take the plunge. And so I went vegan and my life just did a 180. I felt healthy. I felt secure. My mental space was on a positive level. And fast forward, when I was in my master's program, my family had kind of put the bug in my ear. Well, why don't you go for the pinnacle degree? You know, what a testimony that would be for others like yourself. And I thought, wow, I couldn't do that. I'm not that smart. You know, I shortchanged myself. And I thought, you know what? Let's just go for it. So I took the plunge. And when I was searching for an online program, Saybrook was the only university at the time that offered a completely online doctorate degree in nutrition. And so that's how I came about. I did an interview, and at the time, Lori Taylor was our chair, and I fell in love with the program, the principles, the concepts, the foundation of what Saybrook and IFN were going to offer me. They really just aligned with my beliefs and my, you know, how I feel. So that's how I came to Saybrook.
Well, let's dig into that a little bit more. That's really cool that you found that philosophical alignment with your own values. So talk a little bit more. What felt right to you in terms of the program's values? You alluded to some of that with your entree into plant-based diets, right? I mean, I think you saw some of the advantages to that, but it sounds like there's a little bit more here than just nutrition, which is very important. I'd love to hear more.
You know, I always kind of think of the analogy is when you plant a seed, you can't just water it and expect it to grow, right? You need to tend to it. You need to pull the weeds. You need to sift through. You need to make sure it has the nutrients and the nourishment to grow and flourish. And I kind of use that for myself coming here with IFN and then going through some of the courses and realizing that, oh my goodness, this is from not only a scientific evidence-based foundation, but also it has the inner workings of individuality, uniqueness of each person, just as we're unique as our own fingerprints, so is nutrition. And also the humanistic side of it, you know, that there is kindness and compassion and giving, you know, professional recommendations and nutrition advice and things like that. And it's not really just the nutrition component. It's also the behavioral component, being able to connect with people and meet them where they are to develop plans and programs to nourish and grow that seed that has been planted within themselves.
Yeah, it's a great, great answer to that. I appreciate that very much. So when we look at integrative functional nutrition, it's not your mom or dad's nutrition degree, right? I mean, so it's a little different than what you would get in a standard, perhaps we would call more traditional, but I think ours is, frankly, has a lot of benefit over the traditional. What distinguishes it for you that really further spoke to you about the integrative and the functional aspect of nutrition? What does that mean, both generally and to you?
Generally and to me, they're kind of one and the same concepts in my mind, you know. And when you think of integrative and functional, to me, that screams collaborative. You're collaborating as a team effort to enhance and promote wellness within patients, client, facility, community, public health, you know. So I really think integrative and functional nutrition, one, it has a special place with me because it can be unique. It can be tailored to people. And again, helping others is a passion of mine. And so I really feel like integrative and functional nutrition is not only just collaborative, it's like you said, it takes a village and it's a team effort. And I really think people flourish when they know they have a well-rounded, whole person-centered approach to their care.
Amen to that. Yeah, very, very nicely stated. I I will say I resonate very much with your plan. I call it plant strong, plant-based diet. But it was for me life-changing when I did that. I think now 10, maybe a little bit longer than that, 12, 13 years ago. I haven't stuck religiously to it and probably need to get back onto that approach. For me, it created a lot more capacity just to your, I loved how you said that. It cleared your mind a bit. You felt lighter, you felt freer. Maybe I'm probably putting words in your mouth, but what was it about that diet? Because I'm with you. It's almost as though you needed to go through that experience to get to the point where you saw how nutrition, food as medicine, as we sometimes call it, right, had that impact for you both on your mental and physical well-being. So maybe speak to that briefly, and then we'll get into your research here in just a second.
I think this is brief, but yet it's profound. And whereas I don't promote just tossing out, you know, expert advice. However, in my situation, going plant-based and going vegan, I was able to titrate off of anywhere from 7 to 10 medication, mental health medication, all because of going plant-based.
Wow.
And it truly resonated with me as I learned more about the mechanisms and the processes in the body, that our gut is directly connected to our brain. And if we don't nourish our gut, then our brain is not nourished as well.
Really, really well put. So just for our audience, Tracy is not advocating you jump off your meds if you do have medications. But for you, it sounded like it worked well, and you were under, you know, kind of some guidance, I'm sure, with all of that process. Good for you and the fact that you found that pathway. So you've taken this totality of experiences that you have, and you are putting all of your brain energy behind this really interesting approach in your research. I was really inspired by your work in trying to create a more inclusive approach to understanding nutrition amongst the legally blind and sighted populations, which is such a unique take on things. And I think definitely in addition to the scholarly literature, but so needed probably in the broader field and in the specific populations you're working with. Can you describe, you've already talked a little bit about some of the what we would call antecedents or inspirations, but can you talk about what prompted your work in this particular space and what you're hoping to discover as you get nearer to the conclusion of your research? Hope that makes sense.
I can get passionate about this and talk for hours. So what led me to this topic, specifically in this space, research space, is my own personal experience. And, you know, and I know not just myself as being a legally blind adult, but also sighted people. And this is the example I give people. When you go to the grocery store and you want to read a food label, can you read it? It's microscopic, right? Some of the food labels are so tiny that no one can see them.
Yeah.
And so that kind of sparked a desire that, wow, you know, we've come a long way as a species in being inclusive, yet we still have so far to go. And so that was kind of the foundation that got me excited about my research, because if you can't read a food label, then you can't educate yourself on what is in that food or what you're putting in your body, right? And so that led me to wanting to do a study comparing the amount of nutrition knowledge that legally blind and sighted people may have, and then kind of as an added piece, their dietary habits, so what they're consuming. And my hope is, or my hypothesis is, that there is a difference between legally blind and sighted people. Whereas sighted people may be able to actually see some of those components in nutrition fact label, legally blind may not. In addition to that, I think about, you know, life is all about learning. We're always learning something, some concept, some new information throughout our life. So this is the other layer of why I'm passionate about my research. when we think about education, when we're from childhood to adulthood, and we think about the different levels and the different types, how education is delivered, I really feel like, even in my own experience, those with disabilities or impairments like myself may not receive the education in the same form as people that have normal sight. And so I want to be able to understand if there is a difference in their nutrition knowledge, abilities. And then from there, this is really kind of like the foundation of what I plan to do once I finish my dissertation, which is action research, to bring about policy change, to change how our nutrition fact labels are printed or how they're delivered. You know, why can't we have Braille on packaging? Why can't we have screen readers that are actually inclusive? Why can't we have technology that really supports those with hearing or vision loss?
I'd be curious to what the retailers would say to that. I'm sure there's a monetary component to all of that, right?
Right.
Have you had any conversations with food retailers or with individuals in the industry about the why they don't engage in that kind of inclusivity with their products, with their pricing process, with their food packaging, et cetera? Have you gotten any insight into that?
I haven't yet, other than the research, you know, scholarly research, just reading into that. And really, and unfortunately, it comes back to the cost, you know, the cost to implement new strategies for, you know, different populations and different cultures and things like that. It's fascinating that, you know, being in the nutrition space, we recognize that the food industry is a $1 billion industry. And I can't help but simply think, wow, billions of dollars. And a lot of these, you know, food manufacturers and things like that, they spend millions of dollars in research, active research, you know. And I can't help but think, always go back to that nagging question in my mind that why can't we make more of an effort to be inclusive, to be accessible? Why does it have to have a dollar sign on it, you know?
Yeah, it's figuring out that approach. And I know that we'll get to this in just a minute, because I do think the financial hurdles can be dramatic depending on the industry and sector you're in, but agreed with that. I'd be curious to hear more if, as we move forward, as you move forward with this, and as we hear more about it, what these retailers and food industry experts and researchers would say. We'll have to, when your episode goes live, we'll put this out on our network and see what they what say them on this particular topic, because I think it's very relevant to today's needs. And it sounds like what I'm, and again, I may be extrapolating too much here, but sort of the impetus behind this is both accessibility to the information amongst the visually impaired population, and are you seeing, or have you been seeing trends, is the research pointing to trends around nutritional deficits within the visually impaired population? Is that sort of a motivating factor as well that you could speak to a little bit here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So within my current research, I found that there's roughly 50% of our population has chronic disease, has some form of chronic disease, whether that be diabetes, obesity, heart disease, you know, all of the above. When you look at the scant research that's been done on legally blind adults, the percentage of legally blind adults with some form of chronic disease or obesity is at 80%. 80%.
Oh, wow.
That is staggering to me in my mind. You know, it's staggering that us as a nation have that high percentage, but also this sample you know, this population has 80% as well. So that's another motivating factor that, you know, are they not receiving the education in the format that best suits them? Or are they having trouble, like we just spoke about, of reading nutrition fact labels or not having the accessibility to read nutrition fact labels?
Yeah. No, that's sobering statistics for sure. And I think pointing to the larger need for better education, better access to those resources as we go forward. So I really appreciate that. So as we come to the conclusion of our time together, you know, the issue around accommodations is not just in the food industry. We in higher education continue to work to find ways to support our students who need accommodations, but it's also across industries. And your comment around building more inclusive, equitable experiences really, really resonates. I think the university, as I think you may have seen, we're really committed to finding pathways. We don't always get it right. And so we're always trying to find ways to improve, get better. Can you speak a little bit about how we can, both in higher education and maybe more broadly, do a better job? What are some, like, your top 3 to 5 things that go, if you all just did this, or if we all just did this, things would be a lot better, you know, whether it's in higher education or more broadly, with differently abled individuals?
I would say number one, and this is very broad in general, but number one is never stop looking for an opportunity to better the program, the concept, never stop looking for an opportunity to grow. I guess that's what I should say. You know, just because new technology comes out this year, it may be not equitable for somebody 5 years down the road.
Sure.
You know, just as, like I spoke before, like we're all unique, you know, as we're differently abled, that uniqueness will continue, you know, till the end of time. So that's the number one. Number two is, I would say, and this is kind of taking it down to the mechanics of how higher education is offered, but I would say make sure that there are different learning formats. Some people learn visually. Some people learn with auditory. Some people learn with hands-on. You know, now in a virtual setting, you know, that's a little more difficult. However, several of my classes in the IFN, I think, did a really good job of using different formats for learning. So we would have to cook a meal, take a picture, post that as an assignment, you know, so there's more of that tactile learning, you know, or we have to watch or listen to a podcast or something of that nature and then have a reflection on that. And then there's the other component of, you know, of course, reading material and completing the assignments that way. So that's number two. Number three is, overall, people in an education setting, period, whether you're doing a blog post on YouTube, you're teaching in higher education, you're teaching in secondary schools, whatever the education experience may be, is always ask yourself, could someone that is differently abled than myself absorb this information? Could they hear me? Could they see me? Did I have closed captions on? You know, did they need the transcript? Should I make an effort to make sure that this learning experience was equitable for anyone that's differently abled than myself?
If I could just take a moment and say I applaud that. I think it is an important, I'll call it an admonition for all of us, especially in higher education leadership and in the faculty, as well as our student colleagues and peers. I know I don't always do a good job with that. And see, this is where, like, I always try to, I think I do a decent job at it. And then I realize, you know what, I could do a better job with closed captioning and transcripting on materials. Those are just, you know, to your point, they seem basic fundamentals, but I don't think we always get it right. And I have some really I have some experiences with some impressive colleagues that always have a transcript available right after a meeting closed captioning happening. It's a really dynamic experience, and everyone is then able to participate more fully. So I think it's incumbent upon us, to your point, to really think through those ways. So really appreciate those three points that you raised. And everyone who's listening, take heart. I think this is great. Tracy nailed it on that. So we're going to conclude today. We have three questions I ask of all my guests. These are quick takes. So the first things that come to mind for you, it doesn't have to be the star answer. It has to be the Tracy Meadows answer. So what speaks to you, your heart, your mind? So the first one is, what does the term humanistic mean to you?
That means compassion, empathy, kindness. That means meeting people where they are, recognizing that they're just a human being, just like you are, and we're all trying to get from one day to the next day. That's what humanistic is.
Bravo. Well done. Awesome. All right. And then as a soon-to-be, because we're going to put the soon, because we're excited to see you go out into the world with that PhD and further your career, what are three things that an individual can do right now to impact positively their mental, physical, and/or emotional well-being?
Number one, and I share this with potential clients that I have, is take 5 minutes out of the day, dance and sing like nobody's watching. There's something about the endorphins that are released, the dopamine and the serotonin, you know, and again, our gut is directly connected to our brain. And that's a two-way highway, the vagus nerve. So dance and sing like nobody's watching. Number two is, typically you would think I would have nutrition advice, but my number two is positive affirmation. Look yourself in the mirror and give yourself a positive affirmation every day. And then share that positive affirmation with someone else, or give someone else a positive affirmation, you know, and make it genuine. We all could use positivity in this world, you know, even if it's just simple, hey, good morning, I'm thinking about you, or hey, good morning, I hope you have a fabulous day. You know, just some small positive affirmation to start the day.
Love it.
And the third thing is, of course, eat your fruits and vegetables. I know that is kind of like the cliche thing to say from a potential nutritionist, but it's true. Like you said earlier, and I want to steal that from your page, Dr. Long, is that food is medicine. It truly is. And it can heal you from within, mentally, psychologically, psychosocially, you know, physically, everything.
Tracy Meadows, you are fabulous. We are so lucky to have you within our student body.
Oh, thank you.
We're excited to see you get to that point of graduation. Thank you for coming here today.
You're welcome.
Sharing your wisdom and your talents. We're gonna root you on for the next, hopefully, year and a half, 2 years, as you come to that conclusion on your doctorate. Tell us real quickly, where can people find you on the web? Do you have a website? Do you LinkedIn? Where would you like people to inquire if they have questions?
I do have a LinkedIn. It's Tracy Meadows. Yeah, I think it's Tracy Meadows. You can find me. Or Tracy Meadows 12 should be my LinkedIn profile, and you can find me there.
And it's Tracy with an I. And you'll find her if you put in Tracy Meadows at Saybrook University, or Tracy Meadows Saybrook University. You can find her on LinkedIn. So there you go. Tracy, a real pleasure having you here today. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Dr. Long. I appreciate it.
Tracy, thank you again so much for your time today. I hope you all enjoyed her as much as I did. She was really great. And I think the work she's going to be doing with her research, and the work she's already been doing, it's both inspirational and so needed right now. Remember the three major takeaways that Tracy gave us. I love this first one. Take 5 minutes out of each day to dance and sing like nobody's watching. Really use that time to just tap into yourself, to really get that personal mojo going. And then every day, try and find time to give yourself a positive affirmation or affirmations, and then share those out each day with others by spreading those affirmations, by really saying to someone, hey, have a great day. Take good care of yourself. That level of kindness spreads and yields fruits, which leads us to number three, eat your fruits and vegetables. So we're going to cultivate our minds, our bodies, and our spirit with Ms. Tracy Meadows' advice. So very good to have her on today. If you want to see the YouTube version, please visit our Saybrook YouTube page. If you'd like to support the podcast, which I urge you to do, go to Apple iTunes and leave that 5-star rating and review and subscribe so you can get episodes as they come out. If you're on Spotify, leave that 5-star rating and make sure to follow us. You can, of course, subscribe to us on most major podcast platforms, including Google, Stitcher, Pandora, and others. Remember to check our show notes for information on Ms. Meadows, including links to her LinkedIn page and the like. And for more information about our wonderful, fabulous university, go to www.saybrook.edu, click on Areas of Study at the top of the page, and locate the program of your choice to learn more. In this case, Integrative and Functional Nutrition, or simply Google Saybrook University. That's it for today, folks. Thank you so much for being with us. Take care and be well.